My Moz Project, welcome back to this episode of In the Black. Today we have on the founder of Whoop, Will Ahmed. Now, you guys know we did the Instagram takeover for Whoop. If you don't know what Whoop is, it's basically a fitness wearable. Now, what I like about Will's story is he's just one of those guys that just saw a product that he thought he could do better. And it was basically already out there, right? Fitbit was crushing the market. Still think Fitbit's the biggest, right? And he just thought to himself, you know what? It's not perfect in terms of HRV. Like HRV, you guys have heard us talk about it before. We've had Joel Jameson on the show, who's like one of the godfathers of the HRV in terms of recovery metrics and training metrics. But the biggest issue that HRV has is that it's not monitored 24/7. Now, in the past, Raph, you and I, we used the Omega Wave, the heart rate strap that measured HRV, but it only took it for... It was like two minute window in the morning.
It was quite annoying because you had to lie down, not move for a few minutes every morning.
Inaccurate, basically. And I think it was only if you did it regularly enough that you could get really good data on it. But it's easy with the Whoop because you just wear it all the time.
Well, you don't have to take out any time for it, right? You just wear it.
Yeah, exactly. And now I know, Australia, you've been listening. You've been wondering when this thing is coming to Australia. Well, it has officially launched. It launched about a week ago. And we are fronting the launch with Whoop. So we're kind of like their first Australian partners that we're kind of collaborating, doing some work together. Hopefully, we'll be doing more work in the future. But for now, we have a discount for you guys. Whoop were generous enough to do that. Of course, we showed the Whoop world a little bit of Australia and a day in the life with us. If you guys want to get a Whoop band, I would recommend... Okay, so firstly, let's talk about who a Whoop band is not for. A Whoop band is not for someone who is thinking that the Whoop is going to like get them to lose weight or gain muscle or be more consistent with their training. Like it definitely could. I don't doubt it at all. But it's not a miracle, this sort of thing. So if you're already training pretty regularly, say if you're looking to improve some things like sleep, some recovery, that sort of stuff, Whoop is a great product. Just because it just has the accuracy that we've never worn anything like this that has the 24/7 accuracy. And that's honestly what I like about it. When it says my resting heart rate data, it's from the last like 48 hours straight, you know? And I think that's why it's so effective. Basically how I've been using it, the sleep score, man. Like getting that sleep, every day if you see sleep, it's like 74%, 76%. Mm. You're like, okay, I'm actually going to make a change tonight. I want to see 85%. And so I think my sleep's improved by at least 25, 30 minutes since I've been wearing the Whoop band. So it has been very effective from that standpoint. And what I also like about it as well is that it's got the 5-hour battery life. So like you don't have to charge it every single night, which is great.
Well, way more than 5 hours. 5 days.
Sorry, 5 days. 5 days.
5 hours would be a disaster. Getting up in the night. How's your sleep score? Zero. Getting up in the night. Keeps fucking sleep track.
Keeps going flat. And the other thing is really light. So like it doesn't... You forget that it's on your wrist. Definitely lighter than any watch. It's like really comfortable. Initially, it was squeezing me a little bit, and I just loosened up the strap, and then it was good. And you can alternate wrists, I guess, if it's getting annoying on one wrist. It never gets in the way of anything. So it's really good. And this is a 3.0. So I know that other ones have had a few issues. So they're like launching the best one they have in Australia. So if you guys go to just whoop.com, it's whoop.com. You can use, you can get any of their subscription packages, get the Whoop. And you download the app on your phone, and you can download the web app, which gives you like a more detailed graph. And if you use the code MINDMUSCLE, one word, MINDMUSCLE, MINDMUSCLE.
Surely our listeners know how to spell muscle.
I fucking hope so. Then you get 15% off. So it's a very generous discount. We want to start there. We know you guys have been asking about it. We're going to do a full breakdown and review on next week's after show. So make sure you tune in to that to check it all out. But for now, here is Will Ahmed, the founder. Enjoy the show. All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. Today, someone a little bit different. Someone who's, well, actually, high-level athlete. I want to get into that at the start of this. And now sort of tech entrepreneur. We don't always get an opportunity to sit down with these kind of men or women. So we're very blessed to have him on the show. But where I thought we'd start this podcast with, Will, is... now you were at Harvard, so I want to get into that and how difficult that was and kind of how that came about. I don't think we've had anyone that's been on the show before that's been a Harvard attendee, and you were also a D1 squash player. And now I think a lot of people have misconceptions about squash unless they've been exposed to it before, but it's one of the most brutal sports that exists. Like, you only have to step into a squash arena when practice is on full time, and you're like, wow, this is way harder than tennis. Like, this is extremely dangerous. So, well, take us through your squash journey, how you became like a really high level squash player. And I want to know kind of how you developed the idea of whoop at your time or during your time as an athlete, as a squash player. Because I feel like personal stories or personal anecdotes with some kind of negative or positive experience can really, you know, drive the why behind whatever business that you choose to create or product you choose to create in the future.
Well, look, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. It's great to do this. Yeah, indeed. I mean, I was always into sports and exercise growing up. I got pretty good at squash as a teenager, and you know, I was one of the, you know, probably better junior squash players in the country by the time I was preparing to go to college, and I was fortunate to get recruited to Harvard, and so I got to play squash at Harvard. Harvard has won the most national championships of any school for squash, and historically we tend to finish in the top five in the country. Now, squash is actually a pretty big sport in Australia as well. So hopefully some of your listeners know about it. You know, it's a cardiovascularly really demanding sport. It's a lot of start and stop, forward, backwards. You have to be able to run. You know, for those who have no idea what squash is, like, picture a racquetball court, right? So you're in a box, and yet the ball is very soft. And what that means is you have to be running in and out of the corners to get to the ball, and it just makes the sport cardiovascularly demanding. So my experience of being a college athlete was a fascinating one. I had an amazing time at Harvard. I just found that I didn't really know what I was doing to my body while I was training. You know, I think like a lot of your listeners, you get good at pushing yourself, right? I think in order to reach any level as an athlete, as a fitness competitor, even as someone who's just healthy and fit, you get good at pushing yourself. And I was someone who used to overtrain. And so I would go through periods where I was getting fitter, fitter, fitter. And then boom, I would kind of just fall off a cliff and I wouldn't necessarily know why. And it would seem somewhat random to me whether on the day of a match I felt amazing or I felt like shit. And, you know, for me, that was frustrating. And so I got very interested in this concept of how could you better understand the body? How could you understand the body 24/7? How could I predict whether I was training appropriately or overtraining or undertraining? How did I know when I was peaking physically? And then the other thing that I became interested in is how did like the rest of my life outside of exercise actually affect my body? And, you know, things like sleep and recovery, they really weren't that big of a focus of my, you know, college athletic experience, which seems crazy to say out loud, but that's the truth. And so I started doing a lot of physiology research while I was at Harvard. Harvard's one of the best places in the world if you've got an idea and you want to explore it, to do that. And so I was fortunate in that I got to meet with really smart cardiologists and physiologists. I probably read something like 500 medical papers while I was in school. And I ultimately wrote a thesis around how to continuously understand the human body. And all of that ultimately became the business plan for founding Whoop, which is the company that I run today, which measures everything about your body. So happy to talk more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that's cool. And did you ever think that, you know, like when you had the opportunity to, or became an idea and you wanted to, you know, get investment and bring people on board, did you ever see yourself in that position when you first founded it, or did you imagine that you would be like bootstrapping it or figuring it out? Like, what was the plan from the initial inception? How did it kind of grow?
Well, I think I became so obsessed with the problem around understanding the body and you know, this idea that computers were moving from, you know, the desk to your lap to your pocket. I felt they were going to be on your body. And I thought that you would know so much more about your body over time than you did then. This was like, I graduated from Harvard in 2012 and I started the business my senior year. So I've been doing it ever since. You know, what I realized in the very early days of, you know, researching the challenge was it was a capital intensive problem. You know, what I'm describing is not like a cool website plus an e-commerce hook. It's really hardcore, technology development and algorithms and computer science and physiology. And so I had to go out and recruit a team. And, in the early days, you have to find people who are driven by that same mission, by that same passion. I met a lot of people who ended up being flaky or not the right people to start the company with. But I ultimately met John Capolupo, our chief technology officer, who is still with us today and has been an amazing partner for me in building this business. What's interesting about John is he was studying the hardest math classes in the country, so real tech whiz. But his father was also a professor of exercise physiology. So we had this overlap around physiology, and he had the technical chops to do some things from a sensing standpoint that hadn't been done before. And I had a vision for how to build a product for coaches and athletes and beyond. And so that's really how we started out, was just working out of the Harvard Innovation Lab. It was the two of us. It was a bunch of interns. We didn't have any money. We actually were living together while working out of this this innovation lab. And a lot of it was just hustle in those very early months. I convinced some friends and family to give us some money then. And, what we were able to do with a modest amount of money was build a prototype that could measure heart rate variability from the wrist accurately. And heart rate variability, as you guys probably know and many of your listeners know, is this fascinating lens into understanding how restored your body is. It's this lens into your autonomic nervous system. And really, in order to measure heart rate variability before, you had to have an electrocardiogram, like hospital level equipment, $20,000 machine. And I wanted to be able to do it in a small form factor that you could wear 24/7. Now, mind you, the prototype that we built, it had cords coming out of it. It was an enormous box. But it was believable that we could eventually make that box into what it is today, which is a small, slick wristband. So the hard part was the algorithms, and we proved that we could do the algorithms, and that allowed us to raise some venture capital. So we raised about $3 million. This was maybe a year and a half into the business, and we were able to hire some really smart people with that money, and kind of been growing ever since. Today we've raised about $60 million in capital, and we've got close to 80 employees, and it's a real real functioning business. Those early days, it's all hustle and grit. And by the way, anyone listening who's like, thinking to themselves, oh, I've got this idea, do I want to do it? Blah blah. You have to ask yourself, are you willing to are you willing to really sacrifice to start this thing? Because it becomes your life in a way that you don't really anticipate. And it you're thinking about it in the shower. You're thinking about it when you're brushing your teeth. You're thinking about it when you're talking to your girlfriend. You become completely absorbed if you're really trying to solve a problem that you're passionate about. And especially in the early days, it's really volatile. Things go well and things go poorly, but it feels like these massive swings, right? At least over time, those swings start to level a little bit. So it doesn't feel like you just lost half your company if someone quits. And you in turn, as an entrepreneur, I think get a little better at sort of managing those highs and lows.
Yeah, there's a really good film. It's an Australian documentary. You probably really enjoy it. A couple of companies on there that you may have heard of, Canva. The app that you can do like design work on, and then some other things like Safety Corp and Vena Mofo. So they're like Australian tech company startups. Anyway, there's this guy there who's from Blackbird Venture Capital, and he said something that you basically just spoke to, is like, most entrepreneurs would never have gotten into the business that they're in if they knew how much work was required. And in a way, it's almost like they started it a little bit out of naivety, of not really knowing what was ahead of them. But fortunately, in some cases, in your case, you are the kind of person that was able to put up with, the big swings that you just mentioned. And I think what's also really good, and you can probably speak to this, is as you achieve more or if you, as you achieve different levels in the business, you know, goes through different evolutions, you become more ambitious. So I'm not sure maybe how you started or what the mission was or the level you perceived yourself getting to when you started, but as you unlock higher levels of business, you definitely become more and more ambitious. Can you maybe speak to that?
Yeah, I'll start with that quote. Like, I object to it slightly because I think that looking back on things, like knowing how hard it's been, has made me that much prouder of it. You know, it doesn't, if I had known it was this hard, but I would get where I am today, I 100% still would have started the business. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what the quote is really getting at is that it's a lot harder than you think it's going to be.
Of course.
But what I like to tell other founders or other entrepreneurs is it's not as hard as people tell you it's going to be either. Most people are just going to tell you you're going to fail. Mm. You know, that was the first 100 conversations I had with friends or you know, business people about it. Cause it's just like, you know, what does this kid in college know about monitoring the body 24/7? Like, he's never had a job. The objective thing is to tell me I'm going to fail. Right. Yeah. So in that sense, it was harder than what I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't impossible, mm-hmm. right? Because here we are. It wasn't impossible. You know, most people will tell you it's dead on arrival. Mm-hmm. In terms of the ambition piece, like, I think you're right. Like, the goalpost keeps moving. You know, you kind of tell yourself, wow, if I could get LeBron James to wear a Whoop strap, I've made it. And then, you know, next thing you know, like, LeBron James is wearing a Whoop strap. And I'm like, all right, well, if he likes it, I mean, gosh, all these athletes should like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then you got a few hundred of the best sports teams in the world wearing it. And you think that you've made it. But now you realize, well, gosh, if we can add that much value to these sports teams, like, how many consumers out there would benefit from understanding their sleep and their recovery? And so, you know, next thing you got, you know, 5,000 and 10,000, 100,000, and just, it keeps going. And by the way, if you do a good job recruiting, your energy amplifies with the energy of people around you, you know, cause I've been doing this for 7 years, but you know, I'm looking out into my office right now and I'm seeing someone who just started 7 weeks ago and they're fired up, you know, they're fired up to be here. And so I'm fired up to work with them. And so in that regard, momentum breeds momentum, right? Because good things start happening, more people latch on, they get excited. You know, it's like all these things are cyclical, but they can propel you forward. So absolutely, I think the potential for Whoop is enormous today.
Mm. Awesome. Now, we've had some of our own personal experiences with HRV, and maybe you could kind of speak to them because it's kind of older technology. We use like the Omega Wave and something else, I can't remember, but it had the heart rate strap and you'd have to lie down and the app would basically tell you what your HRV is. And what we would find is there was firstly always, you know, really big variations despite what we felt like was not much of a variation in what we did between days. So the days were fairly similar, yet there was a huge difference in the HRV. And we didn't ever really know what to do when it was red. So, like, what would you do, or what do you recommend, like, the high-level athletes or anyone really who wears the band? They get the feedback, they get the result, and it's like, you know, super red, like bad. You know, what are the like next steps from there? Or can you do anything? Should you train? Like, what are the basic recommendations?
I think there's a lot to unpack in that question. The first thing is just like, let's comment on some of the technology you're just describing. Heart rate variability is an extremely sensitive statistic because it's literally this lens into how your body in any moment is functioning. My body could be primed to exercise, but if all of a sudden you measure my heart rate variability right after I drank a sip of coffee and I thought about a fight that I got in with a friend last night or something, all of a sudden my heart rate variability is bad, but it has nothing to do with the status of my body. It has more to do with what I'm thinking about. You know, even just standing up versus lying down, whether you're consciously thinking about something versus not, all these things dramatically affect your heart rate variability. So the most important thing that Whoop does is we measure heart rate variability while you're sleeping. And we measure it during slow wave sleep, which is when your body is restored. So for all the hotshot lifters who are listening to this, right? You think you get strong in the gym. You do not get strong in the gym. Your body gets strong slow wave. 95% of your body's HGH is produced during slow wave sleep. When you're lifting weights, you're breaking your body down, right? When you sleep, you actually are restoring your muscles, and that's when you get all the benefits from the work that you put in the gym. So WHOOP is measuring heart rate variability during slow wave sleep. And we do that every single night, okay? So what that does is it means it's an unconscious period of time, and it's a period of time when your body's restoring. So we're then able to compare heart rate variability over time to yourself. And so we can understand today's heart rate variability versus the last 3 days versus the last 30 days and know, is your body more restored or less restored? All that stuff you were talking about of taking out an app and lying down and chest straps, all bullshit. Doesn't work. It is completely inaccurate. I'm not kidding. Completely inaccurate. Don't use it. Whereas if you do this while you're sleeping, it's unconscious and it's super accurate. And so that's where there was a lot of the breakthrough with the technology. Now, you also asked, what do you do when your body's run down? A little bit of this depends on what your goals are, okay? If you're competing in something on Saturday and you've got a red recovery and it's Friday, right? So WHOOP gives you a recovery from 0 to 100%, red, yellow, green, every day, okay? And if you have a low heart rate variability, really low heart rate variability, you're going to have a low recovery on WHOOP. It's going to be a red recovery. Right? So the question is, what do you do? Now, if you've got an event tomorrow or you got something that you really want to perform at tomorrow, guess what? Today, you should rest. You should do nothing. Your body needs to recover. And look, there's different reasons for why you might be run down. Have you been training a lot? Have you been traveling? Have you not been sleeping well? Are you psychologically drained? Are you dehydrated? Did you eat crap last night? Are you hungover? All these different things, right, affect how your body's recovering. So a little context here is helpful. But just to generalize, if you want to perform really well the next day and your body's run down, you should probably get rest. And in fact, WHOOP is the first fitness product to tell you not to exercise, which I've always thought is kind of fun and clever. Now, there's another scenario where you actually are just doing everything you can to get fitter, and you don't really care about your performance. You just want to get fitter. And that's where you can go into a period of what's called overreaching. Note, I didn't say overtraining. Overreaching is when you're just kind of intentionally running your body down, your body a day or two off, and then you're going to see a huge surge in your recovery, and you're going to be really, your body's going to be prime. So that's where the context matters. Generally speaking, if your body's run down, if you have red, we recommend rest.
And how do you compare, difficult intellectual pursuits? Say you've got like an all-day exam or a crazy day at work. Like, how much does that affect your HRV compared to just physical training, like hard days in the gym? Are they equal or is it totally disproportionate?
Yeah, this is where I think monitoring the body is so fascinating, because the reality is that your body is going to react to physical stresses and psychological stresses. I'll give you an example. So I ran the Boston Marathon a few years ago. I didn't train properly for it, and I got cramps during it. And so the next day, I had a really low recovery on WHOOP. But, you know, sure enough, a couple days later, my recovery had come back up, okay? On WHOOP, it was a very high strain. So my stress level was like above a 20. We measure it out of 21. We measure it every day. Okay, so I have this high strain and then my body's run down. Now, I looked at my body also during a product launch. So we were launching, I think, the Generation 2 product. This is a few years ago as well. And, you know, you guys know how this goes, but you're doing press, you're staying up late to review designs, talking to investors, you're talking to customers. And it actually turns out that my body a week following the product launch actually looked more banged up than a week following the Boston Marathon. And by the way, that was just purely, you know, psychological stress versus physical stress. Mm. So these things really matter. You know, these things do really matter. And the key, obviously, is you figuring out for yourself what's going on in my life. What are positive influences? What are negative influences? The bottom line is you have to measure this stuff in order to manage it. If you're not measuring how your body's recovering, if you're not measuring how your body's sleeping, if you're not measuring the stress that you're putting on your body, how the hell are you going to know what the effect of all these different things are, right? But the brilliance is once you start measuring it, then you can look at all these different ways to improve it. And so that's what's exciting about what we do every day at Whoop and how we work with athletes and high performers.
And what have you found that from the 7 years you've run or had the products on people's wrists that like maybe the biggest sort of issues you've started to find is, or maybe like areas where people have gone, oh, you know, I don't think it's like very consistent here, or like, you know, it says this, but I feel way different to it. And like maybe certain algorithms you've had to adjust just because, you know, one of the things that, you know, we get told a lot because, you know, people send us these kind of products all the time and they have for the last, you know, few years or whatever. And a lot of them are like sleep related products that, you know, because sleep is a huge thing now. Like it's super mainstream about improving your sleep. And one of those things has been like, yeah, the wearables for monitoring sleep. And it always seems like the sleep stuff's not very accurate. Like even just having an app next to your bed or whatever. Is that what you found on Whoop's end, or has it more been the recovery stuff, or maybe you can speak to some of those issues?
Well, look, I mean, we have third-party papers on this. We work with many of the best professional athletes and sports teams in the world. We work with Fortune 500 CEOs and executives. We've calibrated our product against thousands of studies related to sleep and recovery specifically. We've calibrated our product against the PSG machine, which is the gold standard for sleep labs, the electrocardiogram, which is the gold standard for hospitals, and the chest strap, which is the, you know, heart rate monitor that most people would think of as what you'd use for heart rate monitoring before Whoop. And, you know, our accuracy is incredibly high. You know, I think by saying, I always resent it when people say, you know, because we've used wearables that are inaccurate, Whoop must be inaccurate. You know, that'd be like someone saying, hey, we listen to a lousy podcast, so your podcast must suck. You know, it's just like, it's, you know, a lot of the magic of what we do is that we try to be super accurate. And we started with the tip of the pyramid. You know, two of our first 100 users were LeBron James and Michael Phelps, like at their prime, right? We started with the tip of the pyramid, Navy SEALs, and were the official recovery wearable of the NFL Players Association. So we're being distributed to every player in the NFL. We've had to be validated in a lot of these different contexts. So, you know, I think, Look at our white papers, look at our client list, buy the product yourself and test it out, and you'll see how accurate it is. And I completely agree, by the way, like there is a lot of shit out there. The stuff doesn't work, frankly. Mm. You know, but what do you expect? You're going to put a phone on your bed and that's going to tell you how much sleep you got? I mean, have a little common sense too, right? Like we're actually measuring data 100 times a second across 5 sensors. We're collecting about 100 megabytes of data on a person per day, and we're literally attached to your body 24/7. You think a phone like on a mattress is going to do better than that? Like, come on now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's that new arena, right? It's that people don't know what to think about it or how they feel about it yet. And like you said, it's death by association. Just, oh, it's the wearable thing. They don't work. And then all wearables get thrown into that bucket of waste of time, right? So you're right. That's what tends to happen. Right. So look, I actually want to dive into these 4 questions. I know you're a man short on time, so we will dive into them. First question that we ask all our guests is the interview question. Now, for people who don't know, Whoop has a podcast. Actually, interesting for our listeners, you may want to go check this out. Noble will interview the founders of Noble. I don't think they've been on a podcast before, at least not that I was aware of. So that was a cool interview. Always interesting to hear people like with families and stuff, like go all in on, you know, a project, you know, with kids on the line and mortgages and all this sort of stuff. So, that was super cool. So that was a great interview, Will, but who have you maybe not had yet that you feel like would be an amazing guest to have on your show?
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, I think having athletes who use Whoop, executives who use Whoop, is probably the most interesting for the Whoop podcast, because it focuses, our podcast is really focused on understanding people's lifestyles and what they do to better improve their bodies. You know, a lot of our guests travel a lot. They have stressful lives. They compete at a super high level, professional level. So that's what I'm always trying to uncover on the Whoop podcast. And fortunately, I've got a lot of really interesting guests lined up that that fit that bill. When I was reading this question, I was thinking actually about other entrepreneurs and business leaders who, you know, it would be fun for me to pick their brain just so I could grow as an entrepreneur. I think probably the one that I would find most interesting is Elon Musk, because he's taken on such crazy projects, such crazy risks, and been quite successful with them. So it'd be interesting to unpack what drives him, and I don't know, frankly, how candid he's ever really been with people in interviews. So the fact that this person has to respond openly and honestly is intriguing.
Would you?
And
sorry, go Raph.
And as a follow up, is there anybody left you're desperate to get a Whoop band on? If you've already got LeBron James, I don't know how much higher you can go. But
well, I mean, my two favorite athletes growing up as a kid were Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods. Now, you know, Jordan's days are over, but I think he'd still be a fascinating person to meet and talk to. I actually met him very briefly once, but to spend time with. And it would be cool to have Tiger on the Whoop, no doubt.
Nice.
Although we just haven't interacted with him yet.
What do you, does the name Elizabeth Holmes ring a bell to you?
Is that the founder of Theranos?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. What would you ask her if, you know, I feel like you guys have been in similar situations, you know, raising money and stuff, medical tech in a way. What?
Well, Whoop isn't a fraud, right?
We'll probably clear that up for people. Yeah, Whoop is not a $9 billion fraud.
A business, people use our product, they like it.
That's actually legit, yeah. But did you read that book, Bad Blood, or did you listen to it?
I did read it. Yeah.
What to you did you find? Obviously, there's like many things people found fascinating about it, but was there something in particular? I'm just curious because, you know, you've been in similar shoes to her, founder of a big company asking for investment and stuff. Was there anything in particular to you that stood out that you were like, wow, that's pretty gnarly or pretty incredible?
Well, the thing that I feel like got glossed over a little bit was there were aspects of the technology that they built that actually were pretty innovative. Mm. You know, the problem was that Holmes got too caught up in her own spiel and you know, I think brainwashed herself in a lot of ways. And it seems like her partner, that guy Sonny, was also not a good guy. You know, but I think they got too caught up in their own spiel, and they just exaggerated to the point of pure fraud. But, you know, if you read about it, it sounded like they could do like three or four tests with a prick of blood, which, and again, I might be misreading this, but I think that in itself was pretty innovative. The problem is they said they could do 250 tests, and, you know, they couldn't do all these other tests, and then people were doing it in Walgreens or wherever it was, and, you know, getting crazy test results. And, you know, medical technology, you just can't do that, right? It's people's lives at stake. You just can't do that. Mm. So I think that was an interesting piece for me. It was just, you know, like, it's really important to keep your eyes in the sky, but your feet on the ground. Mm. I wonder if they had just been a lot more ethical, and said, look, today we can do three things and we do them well, and here are the markets that it improves. And in 10 years or, you know, 5 years, here's the roadmap for how we think we can go from 3 to 20 or 3 to whatever. But, you know, that's what I thought was interesting. It's just a great example of an entrepreneur who, you know, she clearly had some gifts. You know, she was able to rally people around a mission, and she clearly had some gifts. She just she got completely self-absorbed to the point of delusion and, and you know, it was clearly fraudulent.
Yeah, I think what I gathered from the book, just, you know, running our team of 20 or so people, is just like how, I think when you get to a certain level, and you've experienced this as well, you know, in the beginning, you're very like you said, on the ground, feet on the ground, got your hands in every pot. And then eventually it gets to a point where you also mentioned earlier, it's like new people are coming onto the team and you've got to kind of lead that team. You've got to manage those people. And it really becomes about building a world-class team. It's like, I see it as like, you know, this is Manchester United and like we're trying to, we're the manager and we got the money and we're like trying to recruit the best team and get everyone to buy into the vision and recruit the best coaches and all that sort of stuff. And for her, I think she completely neglected, or it sounded like from the book, she neglected the culture and the team and just having that connection that people need to their people. And because at the end of the day, it's really just, a business is just a gathering of people working towards a mission. So if you can get the right people, like you said in the beginning, that you're going to be successful. And I think it was, who's the guy who founded LinkedIn, whatever his podcast is, he talks about how the first, right, yeah, how the first 150 people are your culture. And so if you screw up hiring that first 150 people, you set yourself up for failure. So I think
people... And it's hard, by the way. You know, you have to like, you have to fight for it every day. You know, you have to, you know, be really, really deliberate about the people you bring into your team and how you screen them and how you treat them. And because then they hire the next circle, you know?
Yeah.
And so these things self-perpetuate. Good cultures get better. Bad cultures get toxic.
How are you still involved in every hire or no?
I try to be. I try to meet everyone in the interview process. I think it's important. You know, in a lot of cases, I'm you know, meeting them to help answer questions, you know, give them a little bit of the pitch why I think they should join WHOOP. And what I tell everyone is that we look for people who have a deep expertise in a particular area and a high degree of humility. And the reason I think that's a powerful combination, this goes back to your points about culture, is when you're in a small environment, you have certain individuals that represent an entire team, you know, like a whole department is one person's opinion. And so you'll get into a meeting and it'll be like, okay, how does WHOOP, like the WHOOP strap, how do we send data from this to an iPhone, right? And in that meeting, you'll have an iOS engineer, an Android engineer, a signal processing engineer, you know, a marketer, and a designer. And they're all going to debate how this should send data from a WHOOP strap to a phone. And they're all going to initially approach it from their own sort of selfish, you know, selfish point of view. And what happens is there's this like natural collision, right? You know, everyone's looking at it from their own point of view. And what happens when you have people with a high degree of humility is they start to collaborate and they start to figure out what's actually the best idea for the group or for the company, not who came up with that idea. And that's a really powerful moment. And what it does in turn is it creates an idea meritocracy. An idea meritocracy is where the best ideas win. And when you've got an environment in which people think no matter where they sit on the org chart, if their idea is the best idea, it's going to win. You make people a lot more passionate and a lot more bought into the work that they're doing. Also, if you know that you can go around challenging one another and it's good intentioned, it creates an even more transparent workforce, which in turn makes your hierarchy flatter because people are then more comfortable interacting with one another. And you don't have to do this thing where if you want to talk to a product manager, you go talk to the VP of product who then talks to the senior product manager, talks to the product manager. You just go direct to the product manager. And that in turn makes your culture even more efficient. So it all starts with the people and starts the interview process. But, you know, you can see where I went with that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's really good stuff. We've had those experiences. We've spoken with and dealt with businesses through the podcast that are not like that. They have too much hierarchy and it's just slow. It's way too slow. Us getting a message to someone takes forever and to the point where the message basically just disappears and we lose contact. But if you have something or if you have an organization that, like you said, is run a lot flatter, then ideas and messages move much more quickly across the company, and then obviously actions and decisions can be made a lot faster, and you know, progress.
I think there's a lot of things that small companies do because they want to become a big, they want to feel like a big company. Mm. They don't realize it's their advantage.
Yeah.
You know, this idea that you have to create, you know, super specific job descriptions, so that you can put people in a box. Right. The advantage to a small company is that you can actually interview someone and create a position for them, right? Whereas at a big company, they have to put you in a box because otherwise you're going to bump into all these other departments and screw up, you know, the org chart. You know, another example of that is, to your point, you know, small company creates endless layers of hierarchy, right? So the people at the top feel like a big deal. Terrible, terrible idea. You want your business to be as flat as possible for as long as possible, because it makes people more bought in, and it, to what we were just discussing, it runs more efficiently. Mm. So I think that there's this sort of mistake that can be made where you're trying to make your business feel like a big company prematurely. In fact, you want to fight to make your business, even when it's a big business, to feel like a small company.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And most people don't know, I think right at the sale of Instagram to Facebook, there was 13 employees. So it's it can be done.
Cool.
Definitely can be done. Will, second question. What is something?
WhatsApp was like 50 people when they sold to Facebook for $17 billion.
Who was that? Twitter?
WhatsApp.
Oh, WhatsApp. WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
That's nuts.
That would have been some strain on the HRV.
That's pretty nuts, yeah.
Yeah, recovery scores all-time low and then all-time high.
Until they get paid, that would be an all-time high recovery.
Yeah, you'd break the whoop strap signing that piece of paper. Well, second question is, what is something that you do each day you feel like is essential for the success of your day?
You know, for me, it's probably meditate. I meditate every morning for about 20, 22 minutes. I practice transcendental meditation. And, you know, it's funny how a lot of times when you find a moment of crisis in your life, it actually leads to something great. And for me, that was very much the case. Like, I was just really strung out in the early days of running Whoop. I was overwhelmed. I was managing, you know, maybe the company was 20 or 30 people, but I was only a couple of years out of college and managing investors and people. And, you know, I feel like I was maybe drinking too much, like on weekends. I was just strung out. And so, you know, I sort of had this meltdown and I was like, I got to do something different. And so I took this 4-day, transcendental meditation class, and it was a 4-day thing. I think about an hour each day, and it cost like $1,000, which I thought was insane for 4 hours of time. But there was a sunk cost associated with it because I had spent so much money. I was like, well, I got to do this now for a while. And man, it's been really life changing. It's created this routine that I've got that clears my mind and helps me be more thoughtful. And, you know, I think with meditation, it helps you look at yourself throughout the day in the third person. Mm. You know, I think a younger version of myself was just constantly reacting to everything that was happening. And next thing you know, you realize you're shouting at someone or someone's shouting at you. And you almost don't realize what transpired to get there. Whereas ever since I've been meditating, I find that there's moments throughout my day where I'll like hear myself talking to myself and I'll be like, oh, like Will's about to get angry. Like, let's see what happens, you know? And it's this powerful sort of check where you're like, okay, yeah, maybe I should just see how this goes. And so it's been an amazing practice. I don't know if you guys meditate at all, but for me, it's been life changing.
Yeah, well, we do meditate, but I haven't done transcendental, whatever it's called, TM, right? That's the nickname for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Tim Ferriss talks about it a lot, but I haven't actually practiced it. The main difference is, from what I understand, there's like a mantra, right? And you repeat the mantra to yourself for 20 minutes?
Generally, the way it works is for the first 2 minutes, you're just breathing, you're getting into it. And then you start repeating this mantra that you're given in the, you know, the process of learning TM. And, you know, if you don't want to spend the money, you can just go Google mantras for TM online, find one. And you just start repeating this thing in your mind. And what's interesting is over the course of repeating it, all of a sudden thoughts start to drift in. And you'll realize you're actually not repeating the mantra. You have a thought now that's sitting, you know, forefront in your mind. And it creates this choice, which is powerful, where you actually get to decide, do I want to focus on this thought or do I want to go back to repeating the mantra? Mm. And if you, you know, most of the time you go back to repeating the mantra, although sometimes maybe it's a creative thought, maybe it's a, you know, something you want to explore, something you want to unpack. And so you kind of create this little filtering mechanism where ideas come in, ideas get pushed out. And so what that does for your brain, I think, is it teaches your brain how to, you know, be a little bit less impulsive and to be more thoughtful. It kind of allows you to, you know, cycle through your thoughts in a very decisive way, a very deliberate way. Deliberate's really the best word. It makes you feel very deliberate about your actions. And, you know, by the end of it, it's kind of like that, like inbox zero moment, you know, where you realize, like, okay, you've absorbed everything and now you're kind of ready to bring things in again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Inbox zero moment. That's good. That's going to be the quote of the episode. That's good. Nice. Okay, so third question. Will, what is something recently that you changed your mind on that for a while you held as a strong belief?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this through the lens of being an entrepreneur for a second. Like, in those early days starting Whoop, so many people would tell me that I would fail that I kind of got to a place where I didn't really listen to what people were saying. Like, I just blocked it out. And, you know, it was part stubbornness, part confidence, whatever you want to call it. But I just realized if I actually heard what people were saying and absorbed it, I would be so overwhelmed in, like, you know, these feelings of darkness and that I would be frozen and not actually able to try to build a business. And so, as Whoop got more successful over time, I started to realize that people weren't just telling me how I was going to fail, but they were starting to look at other ways that the business could grow and be successful. And so then I started, you know, you start hearing what people are saying again. And where I'm with it now is I actually get kind of excited when someone disagrees with me. And I really try to hear what they say. And, you know, even I'll debate or I'll engage and, you know, see if that can change my point of view on it. And I guess where I'm going with this is I think what you want to try to learn in your life, or at least what I've tried to learn in mine, is how do you hear criticism without necessarily listening to it, you know, or how do you hear feedback without necessarily listening to it or doing it, so to speak? Someone tells you, hey, you should do this, right? You don't want to just like let it go in one ear and out the other. You want to absorb what was said. And then you can consciously decide whether or not you're going to listen to it and do it and act on it. But I think that for me has been a moment of growth as an entrepreneur, is finding that balance. Because it is really a balance. You know, you want to make sure that you're not getting overwhelmed by criticism and rejection, but at the same time, you want to try to learn and grow from it.
Yeah. It always seems like there's that moment where someone says something, you have that initial emotional reaction coming from that, you know, amygdala lizard brain that you almost can't help. It's just built, it's hardwired into your system. But like you said, through practices of awareness like meditation, you can separate yourself from that moment and be like, okay, why is this person telling me this thing? Rather than I can't believe they're saying that to me. And you feel challenged, right? It's that moment where that gray area between that emotion and then how you react to that emotion, which is kind of the level up that most people haven't quite developed yet. And it's hard. It's easier said than done. But no, it's a good evolution to practice for sure.
It's really hard. It is. And, yeah. You know, I'm still working on it, frankly. But
we'll work on it till the day we die. That's how it goes. And final question, Will. Do you have a book that you would recommend to the listeners?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of different books that that I like. I mean, one book I read when I was younger is a book called Younger Next Year, which effectively makes the argument that if you follow your practices, you can actually feel and like biologically function younger as you get older. And that to me really kind of reworked in my mind. I'm probably the youngest person, by the way, ever to have read this book. It's really targeted at people in their, you know, 50s or 60s, but I think there's a lot of value to reading it younger. And, you know, there's this sort of general perception that you like hit 25 and then for the rest of your life, you're kind of just decaying, and then eventually you die. And this book makes you realize that actually you could be on like a plateau or even like a slight upward slope. And then one day you just kind of fall off a cliff, but you live a great life up to that day. Mm. And, you know, that to me just seems like a much more positive way to look at life. And I try to be positive about a lot of things. So I really love that. I really love that book. And you also were asking about a favorite quote. And, and I was thinking about this, you know, I just heard this recently and it really resonated. It also kind of ties to this book I just told you. The quote is, let me sure I get this right. Every man has two lives and the second life begins when he realizes he only has one. And it's this quote I heard like, you know, a week or two ago from Confucius. And it's so good, right? Like this idea that once you realize that you've kind of only got one shot at this, you start living a different life. And in a lot of ways I've sensed that as an entrepreneur and, you know, trying to reorient my life. And I also, it's kind of a Whoop mindset in that we have a lot of people that once they get on Whoop, they start to kind of reprogram how they think about all sorts of different behaviors and lifestyle decisions that they do. And, you know, next thing you know, 3 months go by or 4 months go by and you're sleeping more and you're drinking less and you're exercising a little more and you figured out some new life hack and you actually feel like a different person. And so that for me really resonates.
That's amazing. Well, Will, we've been very blessed to have you on the show and have some of your time today. So we're thankful for that. And look, the Whoop is something that we'll be getting our hands on, absolutely, to try it out. And we can let you guys, listeners, know how we go with it. But yeah, as you know, the best of the best use it. So I guess they're just adding two more to the roster right now. But tell us where they can get the Whoop 3.0. That's the latest one that's just got released, I think, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Launched the Whoop Strap 3.0. It's the most sophisticated product that we've ever launched. You can get it for as little as $30 down. And, you know, I think what's amazing about it is just its ability to measure the way you're sleeping and recovering and exercising. You can learn more at whoop.com. So whoop.com. And you can find it on, you know, the social handles at Whoop or on Instagram and Twitter and happy to answer any questions you might have. I'm at Will Ahmed on the same platform. So if you have any questions for me, I can answer stuff.
Amazing stuff. Will, thank you so much for being on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, there it is, guys. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode with us and Will, the founder of Whoop. If you enjoyed it, you're motivated to get a Whoop strap. It's like a really cheap, easy starting point. They just launched in Australia. If you go to whoop.com, use the code
MindMuscle.
MindMuscle. You get 15% off. That MindMuscle is one word, so no space in the middle. MindMuscle, you get 15% off. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. As we mentioned at the start of the episode, we are doing a full review of the Whoop Band on the after show next week. So make sure if you are interested in this product, if you're sitting on the fence, tune into that after show and they'll have all the details on it there. Thanks, guys.